This episode of Stick Like Glue Radio is brought to you by This episode of Stick Like Glue Radio is brought to you by Jim Palmer's Create Your Dream Business Now Academy, a one-of-a-kind live event where Jim will personally teach you how to market and grow a more profitable business faster, even in a crappy economy. During this event, Jim will reveal how to create a million-dollar platform on a shoestring budget. You'll learn how to generate a ton of content with ease, how to attract a steady stream of new customers, and you'll also network with other successful marketers and entrepreneurs. This not-to-be-missed event is September 4th through the 6th in Philadelphia and will quite literally transform your business. Do not miss it. Get all the details and register today at www.dreambizacademy.com. That's www.dreambizacademy.com.
Hey friends, this is James Malinchak, featured on ABC's hit TV show Secret Millionaire and founder of BigMoneySpeaker.com, and you are listening to my good friend Jim Palmer on Stick Like Glue Radio.
Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio. This is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Those are always great things in your business. I am your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. I am so excited, folks, about this week's show. My special guest is a very successful equity investor, Mr. Ace Chapman, and let me tell you a little bit about Ace. As I said, he is a micro private equity investor who has acquired 15 offline businesses and sold 13 of them. He has acquired 24 online properties, the first of which was Cool Wall Street. Ace bought that business, grew it to 250,000 members, and sold it 15 years ago at the ripe old age of 19. Holy smokes, can't wait to hear that one. And over the last 4 years, he has worked with clients from all over the country, helping them buy, sell, and grow businesses in their local market. Ace, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be my guest on this episode of Stick Like Glue Radio.
Jim, I am excited to be here with you.
You know, I have to tell you, I've been looking really forward to this interview because I love the topic. I love always, of course, meeting and learning from other successful entrepreneurs. It's kind of one of the fun things about having your own show is you get to talk with some cool people. But, you know, many of the topics that we talk about here are kind of on the front end of the business, Ace. So either kind of starting a business or how to get and keep customers. And while those are all important topics, I often talk with some of my private coaching members and I tell them, you want to be operating your business with your eyes down the road and with your eyes possibly as far down the road as when you're cashing in for your big payday when you can go sit on the beach or go sit on your boat or whatever you want to do. And, you know, A lot of people, you know, as I'm sure you're going to share, a lot of people when they go to sell their business, they realize, wow, I should have been preparing, you know, 5 years ago for this, not last month or 12 months ago. And so anyway, before we get started and I really get a chance to learn from you, Ace, I wanted to ask you, is there anything else you'd like to share about yourself, maybe your entrepreneurial journey that I might not have covered in the introduction?
No, well, you know, one of the things I will say that we're now working with people outside of the country. So we've got clients that are kind of buying and selling businesses using our strategies up in Canada, over in the Philippines, Dominican Republic, Switzerland. So the cool thing is now, you know, I'm sure you have listeners that are all over the world, and some of them may be wondering, is this going to really apply to me? Oh, I forgot Australia. And yes, the same things are happening all over the world, creating the same opportunities. And if you're looking to sell a business, you want to keep the same things in mind, and buyers are looking for the same things worldwide. So this applies to everybody.
You know, it's funny you say that. When I started growing No Hassle Newsletters, which I launched in 2006, I believe, and then when I got my first client outside of the United States, I think it was England, then I got one in Canada, and then I'm going, oh my gosh, I'm international, and then I have clients in like 9 different countries. So, you know, you're right. I mean, I say that a little bit of humor and tongue-in-cheek, but it's true. Some of the principles are absolutely applicable no matter where you're listening from. So, Ace, what, if anything, held you back from initially becoming an entrepreneur? I mean, you sold that business, as I mentioned, at 19. When did you start becoming an entrepreneur, like 6 or 7 years old?
Well, my very first entrepreneurial venture was when I went to school first time. I was 5 years old. And I didn't have the idea to start a business. My mom had given me $20 to pay for my school pictures. And, you know, when you're 5 years old, $20 equals an infinite amount of candy. So I'm thinking, wow, this is a lot of money for these pictures. And so I pay the money, we get the pictures back, and we go to church, and she's passing the pictures out to everybody at church. And I go up to her, I'm like, how much are you charging for the pictures? And she said, well, I'm giving them away for free. You can't charge for these pictures. And I basically begged and pitch a fit until she gave me the pictures to sell. And so my very first business was selling pictures of my cute little five-year-old face to all the members of church for 50 cents a pop.
That's incredible. Holy – and it just took off from there. Now, were you a guy who cut lawns and baseball cards and all, or, you know, where did it go from there?
Yeah. So after that, you know, I was always just really interested in business. The reason that I bought my first kind of real business was because even as a kid, I was really interested in the stock market. And this was an online stock market simulator. So I remember being young and just reading everything I could about how the stock market worked and what this thing was and all of that. And the summer before I ended up buying it, I mowed lawns, had about $3,000 in savings, and came across this business. And this is where you want to look for opportunities, is businesses that aren't performing to the level that they could be performing at. And that was the case with this business. It was run by a web development firm out of Atlanta. And, you know, they would take weeks to get back to emails. Other people were complaining about the poor service. So I approached them and found out this was just a side project for them. And they didn't want to pay attention to it, so I offered to buy the business. They came back with a price of $70,000, which I was about $67,000 short of, and couldn't imagine where in the world I was gonna get that money. And was able to convince them to at least finance 50% of it, and so that gave me another $35,000. And after that, I had a friend who had some money. He loved the idea. He basically came in and bought some equity, and then I got a credit card. And unbeknownst to me, you know, it was my first LBO or leveraged buyout. But from my perspective, it was just, I don't have money, and I want to buy this thing. How can I do it?
Wow. You know what's cool about that, and, you know, I'm sure you realize it now, but maybe when it was going on you didn't, but instead of saying, I can't afford this, your whole approach was, how do I make this happen? How do I put this together? And when you do that, and entrepreneurs are really famous for having that kind of a positive mindset, but when you actually ask yourself, how do I do it? Instead of saying, oh crap, I don't have the money, you know, all the, you know, you're open to what the universe has to offer you.
Absolutely. And that's been, I mean, I've had clients that didn't even believe in themselves. You know, clients that when they first came to me said, there's no way that I can buy a business, but I'm going to give this a try. And, you know, by the end of, you know, we get them to the point. But a big hurdle is just that confidence level. And you, until you get the confidence, and people think that the internal game is a waste of time. But until you get the level of confidence needed, the creativity won't even come into effect, because your brain is automatically going to turn off at the fact that you don't feel like you can really accomplish something. So that's the very first key to being a successful entrepreneur or becoming a successful deal maker.
You know, you're right, Ace. I was, as I mentioned before we went live here, I was doing an interview just an hour ago, and somebody asked me, why do I think most small businesses fail? I mean, I forget the exact number, like 80% by 5 years are out of business. And I said, very similar to your answer, I said, it's actually, they say they run out of money, and that may be true, but the reason they run out of money is they run out of confidence. Because if you had confidence in your program and your offering and the fact that you have something of value that's needed, you know, in the lean years, you do have to borrow sometimes to keep it going until you get enough momentum. So it really does come down to a confidence game. It's not just, you know, it's not hard, cold cash.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. Did you have a mentor when you were a youngster getting underway?
My first three deals, I had no idea what I was doing. Like I said, my very first deal, I did not have this big plan that I was going to go and find a deal and close it and grow it and sell it. It was literally just, here's an opportunity. I think I can take advantage of this opportunity, make some money from it, and then find the next thing. And so I actually bought two other businesses after Cool Wall Street and still didn't feel like that was a thing. I didn't know anybody that bought and sold businesses or was a business flipper. We hear about people that flip real estate and that kind of thing. And then the other really huge success stories that we hear are the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs, where they take one business and they grow it to this big, massive thing, and then they liquidate it by taking it public and that kind of deal. So for me, I always envisioned that that was what success was. And so literally after my third business, I went through kind of a depression because I sold those. I kind of lost interest, and I felt like maybe I was a broken entrepreneur because I love to just buy these things. I didn't want to stay in them forever and try to grow them into these huge things. I wanted to get out of it and go make the next deal. And so after selling my third business, where other people would have been excited and they just got some cash and all of that, I was actually kind of depressed that I was never going to become this great entrepreneur. It wasn't until after my fourth business, I bought a Homevestor franchise which is a franchise based out of Dallas, but I bought a couple of units, one that was active in Tennessee and one in Alabama, and I got into real estate they were buying and selling about 20 houses a year. I bought the business. We grew it to flipping about 50 houses for the couple of years that I owned it. And I saw this asset that was a really amazing asset because you can rent out a house and have somebody over the course of 15, 20, 30 years pay for this asset for you. And it was really awesome. And we can all kind of remember back to 2004, 2005, flip this house, flip that house, every other TV show. It's a lot of excitement. So I was excited to be in this space. But at the same time, I couldn't help but think, wow, like I've been buying businesses that have a multiple of two, and which basically means that they're going to pay for themselves over the course of 2 years. So while I was buying those things that nobody else is paying attention to, other people are all excited about this thing that's going to take up to 30 years to pay for itself. And not to mention the other things that I wasn't used to. I wasn't used to walking in and negotiating with a seller and having to worry that if I don't get that deal locked down right then, another investor is going to come in the door right after me and make that deal with them. I was used to being the only game in town. You know, there weren't any other business buyers. So I'd go in, I'd tell you what my deal is going to be, and I'd sit back and wait for you to call when you realize nobody else is going to do it. So those were some of the things that I started to recognize, and I sold that business really to get back into what I was doing, focusing on buying and selling business and creating some systems around it like we used to use in that franchise. But the fortunate thing about that is that I got out to do that and ended up looking like an oracle because we all know what happened shortly thereafter with the whole debacle of the real estate market.
Oh, my goodness, you said so much there. You know, the interesting thing about that I like talking to you about, Ace, is that you are have a different slant on it. You know, first of all, when you first started giving that answer, you know, I recognize that entrepreneurs, by and large, are creative. They love the chase. They love to dream and build. But if you then build a big company or a successful company, it usually means you have to turn yourself into a manager, which most entrepreneurs do not like. I'm a dreamer. I want to go build. I don't want to manage and run. And so they kind of they lose interest, and then they want to take off. So that was one thing. You know, so the interesting twist on what you're doing is instead of going out and creating tons of businesses, you're buying ongoing businesses. So why do you think someone should consider buying an ongoing business and instead of starting one from scratch?
Well, there's an endless number of reasons, but I'll start kind of where a lot of your listeners are. I mean, the people that are taking the strategies that you're teaching them are at a huge advantage when it comes to buying an existing business because there are assets there that can be leveraged. I'll talk about the last couple of deals that I've done. One business that I bought has been in business 33 years, retail business called the Bloom Factory, and literally I couldn't take a $1 million budget and get the brand recognition in the region that we're in for that business that it has right now just because it's been in business since the 70s. So it's a business that's been around forever. But when I bought that business 2 years ago in 2012, despite being very profitable, just, you know, amazing, immaculate financials and all this, the amazing thing was I went to go search to find out as much as I could about them online before I met with the owner. And so I sit down with him, and I'm like, man, I could not find your website anywhere. And his next words blew me away in 2012. He said, oh, we don't have a website.
Oh, goodness.
Very, very matter-of-factly, like, oh, we don't mess with that internet, interweb stuff.
Wow.
So these are the kind of opportunities that are out there. And so obviously, I mean, if he didn't have a website, he didn't have a social media strategy, he didn't have a database of customers, he wasn't keeping email, all those things, we were able to start implementing on top of a very great profitable business. And again, this was a deal that I was able to negotiate to get with a very minimal down payment because it was such a strong business. I mean, a lot of people talk about having trouble raising capital. It's because you're trying to raise capital for something that's brand new. Turn that around to raising capital for something that's been around for 30 years. It's a lot easier, I'll just say that. Now, the deal before that, I walked into a business that was a spa, and it was a motivated situation. The seller's husband was getting transferred to Europe, and they had to leave. And so just like anything else, dealing with motivated sellers is always great. But what intrigued me about this business was I found out that they had a database of 14,000 people. And I'm talking to her about the database and kind of what they've done with it and all that. And she kind of shows me where this database is. I'm going through, and sure enough, everything's in there. And I'm asked, so how often do you reach out to these people? She's like, oh, we don't. I was like, well, when was the last time? It's like, well, we've never used it at all.
Oh, wow.
So I was made an offer on that one on the spot within about 30 minutes of meeting her and seeing the business. And we were able to triple the size of that business within 6 months, paid it off completely within that same 6 months, and our only strategy was leveraging her existing database.
Oh, my gosh. You know, here's the big challenge, I bet. When you ask a question like that and they say, okay, I've got 14,000 names in my database and we never contact them, how do you keep a straight face? Because you must look like the Cheshire Cat.
Yeah,
I mean, you know the gold that's in there, right? Holy smokes.
Absolutely. And, you know, the amazing thing is that a lot of the time, in the back of their head, they realize it. You know, in the back of the business owner head that didn't have a website, he had to know, I should probably do a website. But you find these folks, and they're stuck in their ways. They've got a nice, profitable thing going, and they just don't want any extra headaches.
Wow. Now, so, well, let me ask you, how did you become aware of these opportunities? I mean, were they just from people you knew, people know that that's kind of the business you're in? Or, I mean, how do you become aware of these? These are gold mines, these little gems you just talked about.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's a great thing to talk about. You know, one of the keys for me is I've built a brand of doing these deals. But one of the reasons that you're able to build a brand in this space a lot easier than others is that nobody else is doing it. Everybody knows a real estate investor. You know, nobody knows somebody who's flipping businesses. And so when you start to talk to people, it sticks out in their mind. And just like anything else, where you want to have your elevator pitch down, you want to have that hook to your elevator pitch that puts you in a place in their head that whenever somebody comes up and they mention, in my case, oh, I've got this business, I may want to sell, the first thing that pops in their head is you need to call Ace. Bigger than that, 80% of the deals that are done when it comes to buying and selling businesses are done in what I call the hidden market. Now, a lot of these opportunities are just on the web. I mean, you can go to a site called BizBuySell. There's another one called BizQuest, businessesforsale.com. And just searching around on the internet, there are a lot of opportunities that are out there. And you kind of dig through, you've got to do some filtering, and you find those gems. And so anytime you're finding these awesome gems, it takes some work. But the real, the awesome opportunities, just like anything else, I mean, whether it's a house, whether it's a boat or whatever, the very best deals are never advertised for anything. So you want to go after those deals that are on the hidden market. When it comes to doing deals on the hidden market, there are a lot of different sources. One of the sources that's been awesome for us that your listeners could go out and use is actually divorce attorneys. We get a lot of deal flow from divorce attorneys. Like I mentioned with the lady that was moving to Europe, you want to find people that are motivated sellers. And, you know, we had a deal with a guy up in Seattle where the owner of that business, because the divorce was so messy, couldn't bring himself to go back to his business, hadn't been to his business in a year. That's a motivated seller. And so it's a lot easier to negotiate, and my client got an amazing, amazing deal in that situation. So yeah, you want to focus on networking, on kind of finding sources from the hit market, but there are plenty of deals that are on the actual market. You just want to keep in mind that unlike real estate, which has an MLS and, you know, cars that you just go to dealerships, this is a space that 80% of the deals are actually kind of on the hidden market. Now, one other thing that I'll mention that's a huge opportunity for folks that are great marketers is there are 2 million baby boomers that are entrepreneurs and business owners that are going to have to sell their business. And a lot of them are trying to kind of bump things up, get some of these things in order, like, man, we should have a website. And they're looking for people to help them do that. And so in some situations, we actually don't buy the business. We just get a little bit of equity, work alongside them to improve their business, and eventually we help them to go through the sale process so that they can hopefully sell the business at a premium of what they would have been able to sell it at as is.
Gotcha. Now, Ace, when you work with your clients on helping them buy a business, and it probably runs the gambit, but I'll ask the question anyway. Do you work with – are there certain types of businesses? In other words, does somebody say, hey, I'd like to own a bike shop, or I want to own a jewelry store, or I want to own a tanning salon? Or do people come to you and say, find me a diamond in the rough that with my marketing and entrepreneurial skills I can turn around? Are people more niche-focused, or are they looking more to, you know, just – buy a business that's going to be a nice asset?
It is across the gamut. I get a lot of people that come in with a specific focus. I want to by this type of business. I love working with the people that are open, and we can just find the very best opportunity that they can match their skill set and personality to. One of the things that we take everybody through is a personality test. We actually do a skill set test and a personality test, and it brings up some industries and even some areas in businesses where they are going to have a great impact. And so an example would be a lady actually from a little bit away from you, but in Pittsburgh, who bought a software business out of California. And that software business was built, I mean, they were amazing developers. It was in the industry, it attracted people in that industry that just loved the software so much that they told other people about it, and so they never spent any money on marketing. Well, her talent was sales and marketing, and so obviously with that business, she was able to kind of just fit and grow it in a unique way. Now, on the other side, we have some people who come, like I had a guy who had been in restaurants for over 30 years, basically running restaurants for owners. And he came to me and said, you know, I'm so tired of this restaurant thing. I'm ready to get out of it. I got to move on to something else. I want to buy a business that I can own and not have to be in restaurants anymore. So, like, I understand where you're coming from. But let me just propose this as a possibility while we look at other deals. You've spent 30 years mastering this industry. So wouldn't it be awesome for the very first deal just to put two more years in to leverage those 30 years of knowledge to make a restaurant awesome, grow that, sell it, use the cash that once that's paid off and you sell it, you can use that cash to go into something else, and you've got some money, and you've actually leveraged that knowledge. So it goes both ways.
That makes a lot of sense. What did he do, by the way?
And we looked at all kinds of deals, and, you know, we kept it open, and by the end he was like, okay, you know, and he ended up closing on an Italian restaurant.
Oh, there you go. I bet you it was a lot different with all the hard work being his, you know what I mean? I bet it was a lot easier for him.
Oh, yeah. I went up. He had his little girl in there, and his wife is there. And, you know, it's nice owning your own ship, man.
It really is. Hey, Ace, do you help people prepare their business for sale also, or are you more on the acquisition end?
I do. We actually – like I said, we'll do most of the time. I like to go in and partner with the business owner. I'm not as much a kind of fee consultant, but I'll go in. I love to partner with the business. Actually, I had a recent deal I did the deal a few years back, but I got equity in a clothing retail business here in Tennessee, probably about three or four years ago. And over the course of that time together, we grew the business. It was doing about $500,000, maybe $550,000 at the very beginning. And, you know, we started to implement some pretty simple things, but they grew the business to about $750,000. And they were very happy. You know, they basically said, hey, we don't want to really do anything else. We need to take a break. So I really didn't hear back from them. I'd get quarterly checks from the equity, that kind of thing. But they called me to a meeting at the end of last year and basically said, hey, we had an amazing year this year. And I was like, well, hey, that's awesome. You know, they had grown to $1.2 million, which honestly I would have never even dreamed that they could grow to that level. They told me they were moving into a bigger space. And they were going to grow even more. I'm like, great. So what did you guys want to meet about? You want me to come in and help with this new area? And they said, no, actually, we want to buy you out. We're not going to sell the business. We want to keep it. We want to stop sending you checks. And so, you know, it ends up being a win-win. I mean, you know, Now they have a lot bigger business than the original business. They're paying me off, so I'm out of the way. They can do what they want. But yeah, I will come in and just do a small kind of equity level, minority equity level arrangement where they maintain control.
Gotcha. Well, what would you say are maybe the top three most important things an owner should be doing or looking to do in his business when he knows he wants to sell? Let's say he's thinking in the correct mindset he should be 5 years down the road. But let's say he says, okay, within 3 years, I want to sell my business. What are three things that they should be doing so they can maximize the return they get?
So 3 years is perfect. Like most people wait. They wake up one day and they realize they want to retire. And unfortunately, what I found is no matter what, no matter how disciplined they are, they stop being in the business as much. And the business usually will start to kind of go down from that point. Once you decide that you want to sell, the very first thing is to create a SOP, the standard operating procedures, for every area of the business. When somebody comes in and you can kind of put a folder or a big stack of documents and basically say, this is how you do the marketing. This is when, you know, if an employee leaves, don't worry. This tells you every step to take in order to bring on somebody else. And this is, once that person comes on, this is everything that they're going to need to do and that you can train them on so that they're able to replace any of the employees here. When you're able to present somebody with that, 99% of the time, nobody else they're talking to is going to be able to do that, especially if you're selling a business for under $2 million. And so it's going to make you stand out. The other thing is, and of course, you're backing that up with saying, and I'm available to help you and train you and do anything you need for whatever period of time that's necessary. The second thing that helps a lot is to start to make yourself less needed in the business. And this is tough. I had a lady who we were working on a deal, and she was so determined that she was the only one that could run this business. And her husband reiterated as well, nobody else is going to be able to do this. And we're like, how can you expect to sell the business if you think that nobody else can run it? And so, you know, we kind of tell her, well, don't say that to the buyers because no one's going to buy it. And
yep.
Sure enough, we end up in a meeting, and she's going through her whole spiel about, you know, her history with the business and how no one else is going to be able to figure it out, and I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me. This is not, she's not doing this. And so I fully expect these people to just storm out and say, forget it. So we end the meeting. You know, I kind of walk outside with them and ask them, so what do y'all think about this thing? And they're like, yeah, I don't think there's anything we can't do. So they were, and most buyers are not like this, so don't think that you could pull this off with anybody, but they were savvy enough buyers to understand that she was that type of seller, that she's the type of seller that doesn't think that anybody else can do it like her, as good as her, or any of that. And I had we were on the other side of a deal in North Carolina where my client went to talk to a guy, and the same thing, I can't really hire anybody, you know, nobody's going to do the level of quality and all the stuff that I do. And it's more of a psychological thing than it is a fact. But those are really the two biggest keys that most business owners miss in their business. The last one would be financials. Obviously, we all know when you're a business owner, there are expenses and things in the business that don't really need to be there. And just starting to really pay attention to what's going into your financials, making sure that every expense drives the bottom line. Because if it doesn't, you should get rid of it and improve the bottom line. So we spend a lot of time really going through the financials because that's the thing that tells the real story of what's going on in the business. And for most small business owners, they don't feel like it's a wreck, but it's a wreck.
You mean I can't charge all my meals to the business anymore?
Believe it or not, you're going to have to pay for your trips, your vacations, your meals. I know, it's hard.
Oh, my God, I guess I'm never selling then. You know, the other thing is that you said, though, is you're right. You know, so, and when you said, you know, this woman you were describing, I wrote down the word self-important, and that really, not only in the selling, but, you know, I think that's a big struggle many entrepreneurs have with actually growing is they can't let go and delegate tasks so they can focus on high revenue generating activities. And in some cases, like this client of yours, it follows them right through to the end of the business.
Yep, absolutely. And the really downside is, you know, we may have been able to find another buyer that could have come in and run it, but they were just going to be turned off by the fact that that's the way that she's kind of promoting it. And I'm sure, you know, well, like I said, we had a buyer here maybe just a couple weeks ago. We're on the other end, and I know that that poor broker was, like, squirmishing. And from us as the buyer, we want to attack because we realize, oh, this guy's going around telling everybody they can't run the business. So that broker, you know, kind of knows, okay, whatever offer that I get, I'm going to have to present to this guy and, you know, try to get him to take it because he won't. I mean, literally he spent half the time talking about how he the hires that he hired would never work and he was the only one that could do it. It's just like, you know, I'm talking to my client afterwards, just like, wow, I know that broker was annoyed on the other line.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you're so much more knowledgeable about this than I am, but when somebody asks me my opinion, what I tell them is the three things are cash flow. They want to know, is the business going to throw out enough cash to, you know, pay down the debt and the purchase price at the very least. They want to know if there's a customer list so they can, as you said earlier, go mine the gold. And then you said standard operating procedures, and I think that's right because the way I say it is they want to know when you leave on Friday, can they come in on Monday and will the business still run without you? That's like the big what if. If they feel everything's in place so it does run without you, I think you're way ahead of the game.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, if you agree with me, it sounds like I should go into your business then because that was a pretty good answer.
That's a really cool thing. I'm one of many people doing this stuff as possible because there's just plenty of room and opportunities for everybody. But, you know, the last thing that we, which is really the first thing before we even go into a deal, is we're looking at, you know, we're deciding, is this something we want to pursue? Number one is the multiple. So that kind of points to your cash flow point. You know, before we even start discussing anything with the seller, we want to determine, is this, one, are they making enough money? And two, is their sales price reasonable enough that I'm going to get a great ROI on this deal? Because there are too many opportunities for me to take anything less than a really great ROI. And so as a seller, you want to make sure that you're paying attention to that. And, as you're growing your cash flow, if you can get rid of some of those expenses. And so this is a great point just about the meals and how you do get paid back. If you spend that last year getting rid of the cost of those meals and everything, the thing to remember is you're going to get paid for it twice because, you know, if you sell at a 2.5 multiple, that meal that you paid for one time, somebody else is going to pay 2.5 what you had to pay out of your personal account.
So just help me understand that, Rook. So 2.5 multiple, what is that? Is that gross or net profit or what is that of?
Net. So let's say you've got a business that could be making $100,000 a year, but you've got $50,000 in vacations and meals and all of that. And then for the last year of your business, you pay that $50,000 yourself and you basically allow the business to show a profit of $100,000. when you're still going to get a lot of that $100,000, you know, you really all you're saving is the taxes. So the neat thing about that is that $50,000, when the buyer comes and pays 2.5 times, just for that, the whole business will end up being a $250,000 business, whereas for just a $50,000, so $50,000 business, you'd be talking $120,000,
$130,000
business.
Gotcha. Okay.
Does that make sense? So you got an extra $125,000. Yeah.
I'm with you. So, Ace, I have one more question, but let me just get one more clarification. I'm sure there's many different scenarios, but is 2.5 times net, is that a general rule or kind of standard or what?
You know, that's more of one of the things on the seller side that on the buyer side, when we're looking at a deal, we're really trying to make sure that we're going to get a good ROI, so we try to focus on things 2.5 or below. When you're selling the business, a lot can like you mentioned, a lot can affect that. But bottom line, businesses under $2 million on average will sell anywhere from the low end, 2 times earnings, to higher end, 3.5 times earnings, depending on industry, and all of those other things we mentioned, like the standard operating procedure, what the financials look like, are they growing, all those things come into play. But somewhere in that range is what you're going to get, and that's of net.
Got it. Okay, we're really running out of time. My last question I want to ask you is about, like, intellectual property. Like, I guess the client list, if there happens to be any kind of trademarks and things like that, is there generally extra value for that kind of property?
Absolutely. Especially in the world that we're in right now, I've been brought into a negotiation with an app business that was making zero money, that was negotiating a multimillion dollar sale of their business just for the technology. So the world that we're in right now, if somebody else can come in and take your intellectual property or take your technology or software, and they've got the database, they don't need customers, they need product, it's a number, you know, it's just a spreadsheet where they calculate, all right, we're going to send this out to this number of people, and we expect this number of people to do it, and so we can buy your business for this. And it's up to us to try to maximize that potential value or their perception of that potential value, which is a fun game to play as well.
Excellent, excellent. Man, this has been one of the most informative shows in a long time. Ace, thank you so much. Now, I know there's people with more questions, and they would love to connect with you. I'm not going to ask you if you have a website because you're darn well better. So what's the best website that they can learn more about you and maybe connect with you?
Yeah, they can come to acechapman.com. You can also email me. I'll respond to emails and all that stuff personally. You can email me at ace@acechapman.com. And then I'm on Twitter and interact with people there, and that's @acechapman.
Ace, thank you so much. It's been an awesome interview. Totally appreciate it, man.
Great. Thanks, Jim.
Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special edition of Stick Like Glue Radio with Ace Chapman. Remember, Stick Like Glue is the only radio podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I'm your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio next week. And until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up. Hey, now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.